It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't love junior mints. I just don't hate them. I don't understand why they are treated like second-class candy.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Oh, there's you don't a understand why a candy that is basically toothpaste wrapped up in stale chocolate is treated like a second-class candy. All right, I get it. It's a good, valid question.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Is there a time to change? You know, the three teams I've drafted this year, second-class candy is pretty good.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
So far, it's only a half measure, but I've half decided to rename all my dynasty football teams after pitchers. And I'm going to rank them based on like their, well, subjectively, my opinion of like their greatness.
Are these pitchers going to be contemporary or are we going back into history?
No, not necessarily. They could, I mean, an active pitcher could, DeGrom, like he could make the cut. But I'm just going to sort of like...
Jim Palmer came up numerous times on the air and off yesterday.
So I want to name a team after Jim Palmer.
All right.
Shouldn't I? Cakes.
Sure.
Cakes, as he was known as a nickname. Cakes.
See, now that I didn't know.
I'm not naming a team Cakes, but I might name a team Jim Palmer. Be on the lookout for that in your dynasty streets. Okay. If somebody in your league has renamed his team after an ex, probably a Hall of Famer, Major League pitcher, that could be me. So your journey is underway here, right? We're off and running?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, doing great.
So Daryl Ryder, who's been on with us many times, we love to have Daryl. First thing on his Twitter bio, 29-year sports media veteran. Wouldn't you think, Bulldog, that qualifies Daryl to join the conversation about your colonoscopy prep today? Like, if Daryl's not yet to that phase of his life, he's probably, doctors are probably upset with him.
You should do something about it, Daryl, if you haven't. A little PSA time for everyone here.
Just at this minute, Bulldog took the medicine. It's not medicine. Is it? What is it?
It's a Ducalax is what it's called.
Okay, Daryl.
No, Miralax. Yeah. Ducalax were the pills that I took last night, and that was uproarious is a word. I think will be fine.
Daryl,
I was going to say that the fact that you're working today is a testament to you.
So,
but I would advise everybody to steer clear of his path to the restroom, and also steer clear of the restroom he's using.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. He's closer to the bathroom than I am. I don't think I'll be in your way.
It's delicious. I wish I had more to share.
You said a lot there. I don't think I would work today. The colonoscopy.
Yeah, me neither.
No, the one I had was on a Monday, so the prep was all on an off day. I mean, I care enough about my responsibilities here to sort of plan for that. But you do too, because you're here today.
Yeah. Well, I'm taking the day off tomorrow because I think I'm you know, despite it being early in the morning, I think I'm going to be pretty hot, pretty high when it's over. So,
Daryl, thanks for being on our show.
That would be real different.
Listen, I cover the Browns. Every day feels like a colonoscopy. I'm kidding.
There it is. I was going to say it, but you said it first.
It's nice to talk to you again, Daryl. And I would imagine, you know, it's not a time of the year you were anticipating maybe being busy or getting attention from people like radio shows in Buffalo. But yesterday was, I don't know, in one way it was shocking. But when you go all the way back to the contract getting reworked and everyone wondering why did they do this unless they're trading him, maybe it's not so shocking. But still, what were the last 24 hours or so like for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I started getting wind on Sunday that something could be going on with Miles being moved by the Browns. And then Monday morning, had a couple of folks tell me it's looking like it's going to happen and be the Rams. I happened to be on our morning show, and they had obviously spent the morning talking about the trade speculation ramping up because it was June 1st and opening the window for the Browns to be able to trade Myles Garrett. And they asked me the odds he'd remain with the Browns, and I said, well, I think 60-40, 60 he gets traded, 40 he's gone, or I should say he stays. And I was off by 40% because he's gone. And I think this trade was agreed to long before this actually broke. I do know the Browns wanted to keep the news quiet until yesterday evening because they were holding their annual charity golf tournament. And the news broke in the middle of it to the point of Andrew Berry was nice enough at least to come over and say, hey, yes, we are in negotiations with the Rams on a transaction involving Myles Garrett. That's really all I'm going to say about it. If and when the trade becomes official, you know, we'll address it accordingly. And, it, you know, shortly thereafter became official. So I wasn't shocked. I really wasn't. I was ready for it. And, you know, the Browns end up trading arguably the best defensive player in franchise history. Some would say he's the best player in the National Football League right now at the age of 30. You know, this is what happened when you're, what happens when you're a franchise constantly spinning your wheels in mud, trying to get things going in the right direction. Garrett was becoming impatient with the losing here in Cleveland. He has accomplished everything individually he sought out to. Two-time defensive player of the year. He's the franchise all-time sack leader. Set the single season NFL sack record as well. Like, other than climbing up the sack charts, not much more individually for him to accomplish. He wants to compete for and play in Super Bowls, and that just was never going to happen in Cleveland, I don't think.
Those golf tournaments are always on Mondays.
Yes, they are.
They'd like to have them on Fridays, because then that's the news dump day, and you can sort of maybe sneak around, but you can't get the golf courses on Fridays. It's a Monday. Every scramble is a Monday. So that makes that's an interesting dilemma for the Browns or for sports teams. Daryl, I like this trade for the Browns. We have the Buffalo Sabres, who were in a playoff drought for 14 years until this past year. And a lot of, even when the Bills were in the drought they were in, a lot of the calculus for me is like, well, in a vacuum, I like this, but if I'm the GM, if I'm the organization, there's been so much losing that I think somebody eventually wants to say enough already with the you know, trading for draft picks and such. The Browns do get Jared Versier, and I think that's probably a tipping point in this trade, in my opinion. Like, it makes it that much more exciting or palatable or whatever. I don't know. I feel like I want to defend the Browns here, but does there come a point, are we way past it even, where you just can't?
Well, I too have been defending the Browns a little bit. There's a lot to unpack with this whole situation. I mentioned about Miles being frustrated with the losing. We know what he did last year at the Super Bowl, where he just took a blowtorch to the franchise in a very public fashion multiple times. The Browns then rewarded him with a big pay raise and contract extension. And I got to tell you, when I was driving back from Akron, Ohio, back up to Cleveland, yesterday, I was thinking about that day when usually contract extension days are a very joyous occasion, right? And I was looking back on that day, and you know what? It really wasn't a joyous occasion. I mean, Miles played the part. He seemed to pretend to smile and be happy, but I could tell he wasn't happy. That was not the result he was hoping for, but at least he had gotten paid his market value. So I felt like this thing was just rowing in this direction for the last 12 plus months. Andrew Berry was insisting that he was not going to trade him last year. That's what he said this morning. And Jared Verse is why he made the trade. That was the player he wanted. And the Rams kept saying, no, you can't have him. And, you know, my question is, okay, if Jared Verse is that great, then why did you have to trade him for Myles Garrett? Because he's younger, he's cheaper, right, you know, under control as well. So that's a question that in my head I ask. But at the same time, you look at Jared Verse, he's a very good player. Third in pressure since coming into the league behind Michael Parsons and Myles Garrett. So that's good. No, he doesn't have the sack numbers that Myles Garrett has, but he does play well in the run game as well. And look, you're never replacing Myles Garrett. They're not getting another Myles Garrett. And I've been trying to explain to Browns fans a couple of things. One, if you traded for Jared Verse straight up, the Rams want two first-round picks. And do you really trust the Browns to find a player of versus caliber in the draft with one of those first round picks? The answer you're looking for, ladies and gentlemen, is absolutely not. Okay. Because their history is what their history is. Although Andrew Berry has had two very good draft classes here. So all that being said, it was very clear listening to Andrew Berry talk today. Verse was the key to the trade. It is what pushed this over the top for him. They do get additional draft capital, a first, a second, and a third. Starting next year, a first, 2028, the second, 2029, the third. It gives him some more ammunition so he can go ahead and trade up next year for a franchise quarterback in the upcoming draft. And that's what the Browns ultimately need to do, because I think it's pretty clear they don't have still, after all these years, an answer at that position in-house.
Forgive me if I missed this through the early part of the afternoon, Daryl. Has Verse shown up there yet? And if not, when is he expected to? And, you know, any anticipation on what he might have to say?
He is expected to land in Cleveland at any moment here this evening, and he will be introduced tomorrow. The Browns are holding their media availability for their OTAs for the week, and so while we're out there for OTAs, they plan on making him available. As far as what he's going to say, I don't know. I'm sure we're going to hear how happy he's going to be, you know, to be in Cleveland. You know, the standard fare that you hear from players. But let's be honest about it. You just went from a Super Bowl contender to a team who appears to be the furthest thing from a Super Bowl contender and has been for the better part of its existence. So, maybe he can at least soften the blow of losing someone of the talent of Myles Garrett. I certainly believe that he could do that. I don't feel like that they've completely blown up their defense. The one thing they do lose in trading Miles is you don't have offensive coordinators quaking in their boots trying to figure out how they can send two and three tight ends across a formation to move Myles Garrett around and to try and chip him and block him and double and triple team him. I'm sure Verse is not going to command that type of attention, but he'll still be able to provide the Browns with some semblance of a pass rush.
Daryl Reiter, 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. I don't know. This is not my place to say this, but, man, I love Cleveland. Like, I love to watch old games. When I was a kid, the Browns were competitive, if not really good, like mid to late 80s. And I just, you know, the Bills were down for so long, and we all just talked about them. And you with us, Daryl, at different times, you know, when the Browns would play the Bills, just like, this is just, how do we get this off the ground? And then Sean McDermott and Josh Allen happen, and then suddenly it's somewhat of a destination, and just something is going to do that for Cleveland eventually. I know it seems like forever, but I hope this Verse and whoever is next can kind of like get into it. Because that town, I don't live there, you know, this is not really my place to say it, but it's just like right there. We had the Sabres. I mentioned the Sabres already, and the Sabres are like, oh, I mean, it's just like so depressing. And then suddenly it you know, hits, and now it's the greatest thing ever. Like, it's just.
But we have been Lake Erie loser brothers for a long time.
Cleveland is two cities.
I mean, Browns fans have been through hell and back with this team. They even lost the team on top of it, right? And it's just, it's I got to be honest with you, it's never been the same. And this iteration of the Browns is an insult to the original franchise. It really is. And look, it's not for a lack of trying. They've tried everything to find a quarterback. They've used the first overall pick on quarterbacks. They've traded up in the first round for quarterbacks. They've used they've gone the mid round thing. They've signed the retread guy. They've signed the guys at the end of their career. Like, they've done it all at that position to try and find a solution. And they put fans through 4-44, which is the worst 3-year stretch in NFL history, a decade ago. And that it felt like at the beginning of this decade, 2020, when Kevin Stefanski came in, they went 11-5. They made the playoffs. They were a player or two away from the AFC championship game. Baker Mayfield was the quarterback. Odell Beckham Jr. was here. Jarvis Landry was here. And you just felt Nick Chubb. And Myles Garrett. Felt like it was ready to burst through, right? And then it just all fell apart. And so we're back to square one again. So, and they've been going through this process. They don't want to call it a rebuild. I call it a rebuild. The youth movement, Andrew Berry has, they have a nice young core, okay, on both sides of the ball. They really do, but it doesn't matter until you find a quarterback. And they've just, they couldn't find a quarterback and one fell in their lap. And again, they made the worst trade in NFL history because they were desperate to find a quarterback, right, with all the baggage, the things they were willing to compromise morally to find and fill that position, right, and the contract they gave out on top of it. Like, they have tried everything, and guess what's going to happen? Next April, they're going to try it again, and hopefully this time they get it right.
Is Deshaun Watson, I mean, it's early here. I know we're just into OTAs. We're not even to mandatory mini camps, let alone training camp and preseason games. But Watson's first on the depth chart. It seems like the opportunity for him to finally play for Cleveland. I mean, he's played some, but like get the job back is there for him. Is that how it's tracking here?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the leader in the clubhouse right now, but Shedeur Sanders is still in it. This is a true quarterback competition. Both players are getting first-team reps. At least to my eyes, it appears to be very close to equal reps and situational reps as well, okay? So I think that unlike last year, which was the most dishonest quarterback competition I've ever watched, this one feels honest under Todd Monken, and Deshaun looks healthy now. The arm looks good, but you know what? Talk to me when there's a defense that's allowed to hit him on the field, okay? Because him looking good at practice hasn't been a problem. Although his last training camp back in 2024, he was a disaster. But like. The practice thing's the easy part. Can you get it done in a game? And here's what I know about Deshaun Watson. Every time he's come back after a long layoff, he has been terrible. And that's my expectation this fall. Yeah, he'll probably win the job. And then he'll look terrible. Shedeur Sanders, if you don't win the job, you're not a failure. It's not a failure. You're not being sabotaged. None of that. Guess what? You're going to see the field anyway at some point this year. Okay, because that's how it goes here in Cleveland. They need Deshaun Watson might start week one. He's not starting week 18. I guarantee you that. Okay, that isn't going to happen. So for one reason or another. So Shedeur Sanders is going to get his chance to show what he can do this year. And and be honest with you, hopefully he can give the front office something to think about, right? Because if Shedeur Sanders can show that he can do this thing, then imagine what the Browns could be able to do with their draft capital from there to build around him instead of having to compile their draft capital to position themselves to get into the top two or three of the draft to pick the guy.
How much interest, if any, do you think there will be in this supplemental draft idea?
Ooh,
if Sorsby does end up declaring for that? I mean, we're a few weeks out from that, and I know the hierarchy, I know Monken talked about it and sort of sounded, I think the wording was it's a slippery slope or something. Barry, recently.
I'll tell you what Monken said yesterday.
Okay, good,
not
go ahead.
A chance in hell. Oh. That's what he said yesterday.
Okay, right, not a direct quote, but that was the theme. Yeah.
Is he a reputable source on this?
Yeah, I would say the head coach would be a reputable source, okay. Yes. I mean, I'm paraphrasing but like If you look at the video I posted yesterday, you look at his face and then listen to what he has to say. He even said, "Hey, that's just a bridge too far." So I think the Browns' interest in him is absolutely none. Okay. Andrew Berry was asked today about it, and he gave the typical, "Well, we always explore options to improve our roster, and we're evaluating the situation." But if the head coach of the Cleveland Browns don't want him here, he ain't going to be here. So the Browns will not have interest in him. I'm pretty confident in that. I do think, though, there will be a team around the NFL that will. The problem for Sorsby is the gambling, okay? And, that's a no-no in any sport. We know that here in Cleveland. The Cleveland Guardians lost their closer and a starting pitcher because of gambling related things. They're on indefinite suspension with Major League Baseball. That happened last year. So yeah, gambling's a bridge too far in sports. They'll tolerate other unsavory off the field behavior that involves the abuse of people. But hey, you start betting on stuff, well, you're persona non grata. And yes, I'm laying the sarcasm on really, really thick because, like, you know,
it's appropriate.
And in fairness, gambling, you know, when you're talking gambling, you are talking about potential compromising the integrity of the game. And so I get it. I do understand it. But also at the same time, I kind of wish the NFL had the same, shall we say, passion and disdain for other behavior as they do, the gambling aspect of it.
What are you saying? All these ads are like a sign that maybe the league is complicit? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You're saying that the league is not completely making a stance that it's absolutely reprehensible behavior? Is there a double message happening here?
Yeah, and like I said, you know, I wish their standards when it comes to the behavior of players off the field is equally as strong, because as we know, they've been very inconsistent in that regard, depending on where you fit on the scale of being really, really good or, being a fringe player. What do they say? Performance breeds the tolerance, right? You perform, they're more tolerant. You don't perform well, they're less tolerant.
I don't know how many years ago this was now. It probably was a DFS thing, Bulldog, not like a betting on a game.
Mm-hmm.
But I can remember sitting in the Bills press box before a game, probably next to you, and trying to get a lineup in, like a 1 o'clock slate FanDuel lineup or something. And it wouldn't let, like, the Wi-Fi would not let me do it.
Blocked from the stadium.
And I just happened to look up across the field. The players were on the field warming up. And the biggest sign in the world, FanDuel. I'm like, you know, I think I came in here the next day and made this point. And then the Bills came back to me and like, we'll fix that. we'll fix that. You should be able to do lineups going forward.
Right.
But that happened.
Hey, I'm old enough to remember when the NFL wouldn't even talk about fantasy football, right?
Oh, well, I would love to talk more about fantasy, but Bulldog won't let me. I think this has probably been covered, Daryl, but in the last minute or two, if you don't mind, like, we said this already, you and I, like, I kind of want to respect the Browns for this trade. What is where's the meter landing on Andrew Berry at this point? Is it just completely so far gone that the fans won't listen to him? I guess he spoke maybe today about this trade. Or, I mean, he gets another chance here to, you know, fix it as the GM. Yeah. And that's not a chance every GM on a team that's been losing gets.
And especially with this ownership group, which has the reputation of being very impatient. And I give them credit. And also, too, the ownership is very active within the organization. But, yeah, this is Barry's seventh year here. He's getting an opportunity to kind of put this thing back together. Some moves that he has made just, frankly, haven't worked out. And obviously that started with Deshaun Watson, right? But he has had two really good drafts. These last 2 years, he has last year's rookie class was really impressive. Carson Schlesinger, Quinshon Judkins before he got injured was fantastic. Just all around an outstanding class. And then this year with Spencer Freneau, the fact that they got Casey Concepcion and Boston in here, like there is a real good, sound, solid young nucleus here. Fans, yeah, not all that interested, I think, right now. They're frustrated. They're angry today that Myles Garrett was traded. They'll get over it. They always do. Andrew Berry has a little bit of a new lease on life and a little bit of a leash from the ownership group to get this thing on track. They understand where they are and the pivot that they've made in the team building process. And they believe that Andrew Berry is the guy to get this thing on the tracks and rolling in the right direction. And they're giving him every opportunity to do that.
Interesting. Thank you, Daryl. Hope we can talk again when we get closer to the season. I know the Bills and the Browns are not on each other's schedule, but it's always a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me.
You're welcome. Daryl Ryder, 92.3 The Fan, in Cleveland. The Bills only have the Ravens from the AFC North this year, and that is in Week 8, November 1st. They don't see the Browns. That division, AFC South, NFC South, that's the, you know, that's the parlay you want. That's the Bills last year and the Patriots.
Right.
So it can change, but, I mean, it's not crazy. If you look at the Browns, I know we have to get to a break. It's not crazy to think they could start okay. Jacksonville, Tampa, Carolina, Pittsburgh, Jets, Baltimore, Tennessee, Pittsburgh, Saints. I mean, a decent team wins half of those games. Are they going to be decent?
Are they even going to be decent?
Right. But it's just like, that's the parlay you want. AFC South, NFC South. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, at 803-0550. This is WGR.
This iteration of the Browns is an insult to the original franchise. It's not for a lack of trying. They've tried everything to find a quarterback. They've used the first overall pick, traded up in the first round for quarterbacks. They've used the mid-round thing. They've signed the retread guy. They've signed the guys at the end of their career. Like, they've done it all at that position.
I was kind of nodding through that. It's a strong take, but I wasn't ready to fight it. This iteration of the Browns is an insult to the prior one. Kind of. I get it. I mean, I feel like he sort of, that's fair. Non-derogatory, or is it derogatory? That's fair.
I think they've earned that sort of commentary from someone who covered both iterations.
It's not for lack of trying. There are times when teams lose, and it is for a lack of trying.
Yeah.
But Daryl Ryder, 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, won't go that far with these Browns. They have had three double-digit win seasons since returning to the league in 1999. 2007, 10-6 wasn't good enough. That might have been the year where they beat the Bills in that snow game, 2007.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that was that year.
2020 is the, we talked about it with Daryl, like the Mayfield year where they lost to the Chiefs. They were close.
Yep. They blew out the Steelers, and then, yeah, there's a play, I don't know if it's Mayfield or someone else, there's a fumble near the goal line that could have been ruled that was a touchback or went out of bounds, and I think whatever it went against the Browns, whatever it was. They were very close to maybe even taking the lead late in that game on that play. If I remember right, I don't know if that's – maybe. I might be mixing stuff up. Anyway, they were very competitive in that game. Yeah.
And then in Houston, the wild card 3 years ago with Flacco where they got blown out.
It was a disaster, right?
They had just gone to Houston and beat them, and Amari Cooper had like a career day. And then not so in this game.
Two pick sixes.
Yep.
Yeah.
In the third quarter.
Bad.
Kind of ended it.
Yep.
Oh, the Browns. Thanks to Daryl for joining us. Tonight, game one of the Stanley Cup Final. I'm going to say go Carolina. I don't want to have like a serious flag plant on who to root for in the series because I'm not that interested in it. But I kind of like the idea of Carolina winning more than Vegas winning. Do you need to know why? Should I be challenged on this?
I might like to hear some kind of an explanation.
Is it crazy?
I don't think anything's crazy. I don't know. What might be crazy is planning to watch as much. I mean, I'd like to say every minute, but we'll see. But I want to watch it, but I don't think I can live with I'm gonna be unhappy no matter what happens. I hate Carolina. I mean, I hate their anthem singer. I hate everything about them. Vegas, and it's hardly even Eichel at all at this point. The goalie just questionable, like, that, you know, I've mentioned a few times over the last, I don't know, week or two, as they were looking like they were going to get there and then ultimately did get there by getting through Colorado. Like, this, how they treat people. it's not so much how they treat the people that work for them, although they're certainly doing a number on Bruce Cassidy, the coach they fired with, what, 8 or 9 games left in the regular season, and they won't let him interview for other jobs, which is treating people who work for you poorly, no doubt. Well, used to work for you. They fired him. It's more like the stuff with the media. Like they just act like they want you to think they're villains or that they actually are villains. And like they've never really allowed Carter Hart to answer questions about his situation that happened. I mean, he and teammates from the junior team many years ago were exonerated in court. They were not found guilty of gang raping this woman who accused them of that. But they have cut off any opportunity for him to elaborate on what he's learned, what he's gone through, how he's, you know, become a better person, whatever. He says, he had a media availability, I think yesterday, and he makes a statement, and then there's a follow-up question, and it's just, here comes the, that's all we have to say about that. These will not allow for, you know, him to, I guess, you know, answer questions about it, period. And that's in addition to not making players available after they won their second round series and the fine and the draft pick. And all. So they've accrued a reputation for just doing whatever they want, but it's not so much that they treat their people poorly. It's that they're treating people who are trying to do their jobs, I think, poorly. Media, largely. And, like, I don't know. I don't have a huge axe to grind about that, other than I just think they come off like jerks. Anyway, I don't like either team is all I'm saying. Like, I can't root for Carter Hart. Really, that's it with Vegas. Otherwise, I think maybe I'd be fine with them. Because Eichel doesn't really leave much of as bad a taste as maybe it should. And I'm not saying you should feel that way. I'm just saying for me, I watch him and I don't get mad anymore. The most aggravating thing about them, aside from this Carter Hart story, is that they're in the finals for a third time in only less than 10 years in the league. That's annoying.
I'm going with my thing that I like it when sports seasons are decided and won by good or great teams. I don't know, it's old man stuff, mm-hmm. but so many playoff teams now. Hockey's no different than it used to be. In fact, percentage-wise, it's less true. But I just, you know, hockey is also so random and so close between 1 and 8. We saw that this year, the disparity between divisions and everything. Carolina was an excellent team all year, and Vegas was not. They were just not really good at all. They were just mid.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd rather a team that I guess deserves it win the Stanley Cup, not just because they play in a certain time zone. So I know, I mean, I'm going a little far, but I like that. And I kind of will say too, this is not analytics, but in terms of the Sabres, if a team in the East wins, then maybe they're a little bit softer the next time. Like Florida got tired and went away.
Yeah.
And maybe Carolina would take a break.
Took 3
I don't know.
Years, but yeah. Yeah,
yeah, right. It did. That's right.
Yeah.
But I kind of think that too. I have no Eichel issue at all. Yeah. I think Vegas, whether you want to call them a villain, I think you can. The ruthlessness of that organization and making that coaching change, I don't want to root for that. I even knew Tortorella. I don't want to root for that, though. Like, to me, I mean, there's nothing – it's not against the rules.
Right, right.
But it just feels – you get to choose. And Brind'Amour, say what you want about 2006 or whatever else about their ownership, their organization. That guy's put his time in. And he has been a big figure in hockey for decades. So if he wins, okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, we're not friends, but
yeah.
I'm not excited to watch it, but I would come down on Carolina's side. Yeah.
That's just if I haven't said it already, I think a good question for me to answer would be if either side, like everyone who scores a goal in this game is going to make me mad.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, what am I doing? Like, what level of responsibility do I feel? Like, mostly it's, I say this all the time. I'm not bragging. It just is. I watch a hockey game every night in season. Just about. I mean, maybe not every weekend. But even then, yeah. I mean, on a Sunday after golf, even, I'm like, okay, there's a hockey game on. So I'm going to devote that much of my free time. Part of it's, you know, the Sabres are a work thing, but really it's my free time. I could watch anything. I'd be watching something with my wife. No, I'm going to turn a hockey game on. And so I get to the final seven games of the year, and I want to see it conclude.
You want to see it through.
I want to see it all the way through. If I'm going to do that, really, from October to now, turn a hockey game on in my living room almost just about every night, I feel really ridiculous walking away from the final, but we'll see how it goes. It might just aggravate me to the point where I got to walk. Let me know what happens. I don't enjoy either of these teams being successful.
I am that way about so many teams, though. Most series in the finals in any sport, I feel like, you know, I'm not really on board with any of this.
Yeah.
It just tends to happen.
A lot of that can suck. I mean, I liked Montreal this year. I watching the playoffs, realized that I don't hate the Flyers like I used to.
Well,
but and part of it was that they were playing Pittsburgh when the playoffs started, and, you know, I sat down in front of the TV and like, I guess I hate Pittsburgh more than Philadelphia now. When did that happen?
See, that's your only hope. If you hate 25 teams, sometimes you're going to root for teams that you hate less. Maybe that's tonight. That's me tonight. Sal Capaccio coming up in 20 minutes. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, WGR.